Hello and welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Georgia.
And today we're going down under, is my understanding, Georgia.
Yes.
A trip to Australia to hear about a pretty sad case, am I right?
Yeah, unfortunately so. It's a very sad case this week, but we are going to Australia for this one.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about this case. It's not one that's actually been on my radar before.
Yes.
And before we do that, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I know it's been a while since we recorded. Greg went away to Tenerife, so we did like a couple episodes in 1 week, and then we've had a bit of a break, but we're back. So apologies for not releasing one last week. Life just kind of caught up with us, but we're recharged. We're ready to get some more episodes out there. But yeah, I'm good. What have I been up to? I visited Nottingham and saw some friends, which was really nice. Been walking and climbing and just keeping myself busy, really. But how about you? How was your holiday? Well/work.
My holiday really was a working holiday. Yeah. There was a lot more work than holidaying, but it was really nice. It was really beautiful. We stayed in a pretty crazy Tenerife house, and I got to meet lots of the people that I work with, which was great. We didn't go out a huge amount, but that was just because some of the people that I was staying with were such excellent cooks that, honestly, I'd rather have stayed in.
Oh, wow.
Eating what they were cooking. It was so good. Yeah, I've never eaten quite like that before.
Amazing.
So yeah, that was really cool.
Was it all like Norwegian-style cooking as well? Because I know you...
I don't think so. I don't think that it's like particularly Norwegian. They were just super big fans of cooking.
Just really good at cooking.
And... yeah, like I watched this one guy cook a French omelette, and yeah, I've just been cooking omelettes wrong all my life, I now know.
Is there any tips that you can share with us?
So he made sure he had enough eggs to like a third fill the pan, depth-wise. Yeah, and then he just kind of leaves it, and then just gives it like the occasional stir, but on a very, 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 very low heat. And then after a while, it starts to set a bit, and it just like... perfectly formed this delicious thing that he then rolled up. I just never eaten something so fluffy. I couldn't believe that it came from eggs. I was just shocked.
That sounds so amazing. Good. I think I'm gonna have to make one tomorrow. That's my breakfast.
I've been trying to make one since. I've definitely got better. I like made one today, and it was better, way, way, way better than my usual omelets, but it just wasn't the same. I can't quite get that omelet fixed now.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go to Norway. They were just cooking a lot with organic, fresh, local produce, and it was really good, really good. And then also, like, we had one of my colleagues from Mexico originally. He made carnitas in tacos one night, which...
oh,
God,
wow.
It was so good.
That sounds amazing.
Fortunate enough to be working with quite a multicultural group of cuisines at the moment, so it's great.
Oh, that sounds so good. Yeah, very jealous.
The Welsh cuisine doesn't quite hit the same.
yeah. Well, no, that sounds amazing. Definitely very jealous. I'd like to be doing my work somewhere sunny, for sure.
Yeah, I'm keen to go back. I mean, this is like one of the nice things about me working remote, really, is that I can just get up and go. It doesn't mean that I've been doing a lot of traveling recently. Like, not cool traveling to like Tenerife. That was cool, but a lot of moving to London, and I've been about, but it also means that I probably sound like more tired than I normally am.
Yeah.
It's probably just because I am, but I'm here, I'm present, I'm cool,
yeah.
I'm all good. It's good to be back on the microphone.
Yes, it is good to be back. Shall we kick off with it and start talking about the case of Daniel Morecambe?
Let's do it. Let's dive in.
I want to start off this one by saying many, 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 many trigger warnings. I will be saying the occasional trigger warning throughout when there's a particular hard-hitting topic that's about to come up, but this case is about a 13-year-old boy that was murdered. He was abducted and murdered. So, yeah, it is a sad case.
It always hits a little harder when it's a younger child.
Yeah, definitely. Daniel James Morecambe was born on the 19th of December, 1989. And he was from Australia. He was born in the Sunshine Coast in Queensland and lived with his parents and his identical twin brother in the town of Palmswood. And so I'm going to go straight to the day of the disappearance. 13-year-old Daniel decided to go into town for a haircut and to buy some Christmas presents, which makes it so much harder for what happens next, because he was just innocently going to get some Christmas presents for his family.
Yeah, it's sad. We can all relate, I'm sure.
He hoped to catch the bus at 10 minutes past 2 to the Sunshine Plaza shopping centre. He wore a famous red t-shirt, which is now being used as a symbol of Daniel. So as I talk about it a bit more later, there's a day where everyone wears a red t-shirt in remembrance and to honour Daniel and his life.
I'm starting to feel like I have heard this case, actually.
It's a big one in Australia. After what's happened, the amount of work the parents have put into this in the way that they've created a Daniel Morecambe Foundation, and it's all about awareness of children's safety. And yeah, so there's a massive amount of work. So yeah, you probably might have come across something like this.
Yeah, the red t-shirt rings a bell, which maybe is a good sign that they did a good job of making sure there was something famous.
Yeah.
An item related to Daniel that was famous about this case.
Definitely. He was catching this bus at 10 minutes past 2 to go to the shopping centre. Well, the bus stop that he stood at was an unofficial bus stop, although it was used by many people. The first bus didn't arrive because it broke down, so the bus company sent out a replacement. But when this bus arrived, because it was late, it decided not to stop for Daniel.
Is this going to be one of those sad moments where it's like a lot of small misfortunes, a lot of coincidences that have led to his disappearance?
Unfortunately so. The replacement bus radioed into the depot requesting another bus should be sent out to go and pick up Daniel, which arrived 3 minutes later. Daniel wasn't the only person waiting to ride the bus. The driver reported, and other witnesses said, that there were two other men waiting with him. When this new bus arrived, the two men and Daniel were nowhere to be seen.
Oh, God.
It was literally, so the driver on the second bus, the replacement bus, drove past them and saw Daniel there, radioed in, said, please can we get another bus? There are people waiting. And within 3 minutes, he was no longer there.
Was that the last time anyone saw him?
Yes, it was, unfortunately. So Daniel was abducted from this bus stop on the 7th of December 2003. The bus stop was situated just under the Keel Mountain Road overpass by Wombai District in Sunshine Coast. The investigation into Daniel's disappearance was one of the most extensive in Queensland's history. 5 years after his disappearance, a reward for the information rose to $250,000 from the government, and a further $750,000 was privately donated.
So that's about £500,000, I think.
Yeah.
Might have been different back then, but
it's a lot of money. And this was 5 years on, so still his parents know nothing. The private donated reward had an expiry date of midnight on the 31st of May, 2009. I haven't heard this before, but it almost sounds really haunting. In May 2009, a clay statue of a life-sized man who was thought to be involved with the disappearance of Daniel was placed at the last place of known sighting of Daniel. So they created a full life-size statue to stand at this bus stop where they last saw Daniel.
Well,
I've not heard of that technique before.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. That sounds quite interesting, though.
Mm.
I guess it's unique enough to start gathering some attention.
Yeah, definitely.
Did it work?
Well, within a few days of the statue being there, the police received over 300 tips. So it may have contributed.
Wow, okay.
Mm.
Interesting. You can kind of see maybe people don't realise whether they recognise someone or not unless they see them in context.
Yeah. You could like jog someone's memory or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I describe to you a man right now, I won't, but if I did, a man waiting at a bus stop, you might be like, no, it doesn't really sound like anyone I know. And then you see a man at a bus stop, or a clay man in this scenario.
Yeah.
It jogs the memory a bit more. You're like, oh my God, that looks like Norbert that lives down the road or something.
It could have done, yeah. And, you know, different humans probably remember different features on a person as well. So, it could have worked. On the 31st of May, 2009, so this was the day where the private donator's reward was going to expire. Seven Network, which was a well-known Australian TV network, reported of a known paedophile that potentially could have something to do with Daniel's disappearance. Douglas Jackway had been released from prison only a month before Daniel's disappearance. There were many controversies surrounding the release of Douglas. Independent Queensland MP Peter Wellington claimed the Supreme Court has shown evidence of Douglas was likely to reoffend. However, all of this information actually came to nothing, and he had no involvement in Daniel's disappearance.
Interesting, okay. But there was someone that was released that had a high propensity of reoffending, though.
Yeah, exactly. And so this was about 6 years after his disappearance that this came to light. But it came to nothing, unfortunately. In July 2009, Daniel's parents requested a coronial inquest into the disappearance of their son. The inquest was held between October 2010 and April 2011, which called witnesses to come and share information. The bus driver who didn't stop that day was called, as well as a woman who had seen a man loitering nearby where Daniel was, plus many, many more people.
Mm.
The police actually performed a Mr. Big operation. And a Mr. Big operation is a covert investigation procedure used by undercover police to gain confessions from suspects in cold cases.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that it was called a Mr. Big. I mean, we've heard about like covert operations where like police go undercover and they kind of try to infiltrate a gang or something like that. But I haven't heard it called a Mr. Big operation.
No, nor me. I've never heard Mr. Big used like that.
Yeah, yeah. So they used this procedure in this case. An undercover police officer befriended Brett Cohen and introduced him to his friends, who were part of an organised and wide-ranging and very powerful criminal gang, which, of course, was all made up to make Brett confess.
Interesting. And do you know why they strongly suspected Brett?
I'm sure they had many reasons to probably suspect Brett, but he had two previous child sex offences and he was in the area at the time. Now, I want to do a quick overview, very quick, brief overview of who Brett was. Now, this is a massive, massive, massive trigger warning because he's just the most repulsive, vile human ever. So I'm not going to spend too much time, but just be warned for this next 5-10 minutes or so.
Buckle in.
Yeah. So Brett was bullied and he was also a bully at high school. He would proudly parade around school with an erection despite everyone's discomfort over it.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, it's quite unusual behaviour. yeah. It's so he would parade very proudly of this around school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. At year 10, he dropped out of school. He was a difficult teenager, and at 17 years old. He was a regular user of LSD, cocaine, and methamphetamines, which he said, quote, they fuck your inhibitions up, you know, your boundaries, which doesn't really bode very well.
Part of his drug use was basically him pushing his own inhibitions.
I guess so. I mean, he hasn't committed anything at this point, but...
Yeah, and this is a guy that was already in the business of parading around his erection at school. Mm-hmm. Probably he had pretty unorthodox inhibitions as it stood anyway, let alone before the drug use.
Yeah, it seems so. So the next bit's really quite hard-hitting. So whilst he was performing community service duties at a public park, 18-year-old Brett raped a 7-year-old boy in a toilet cubicle. Afterwards, Brett seemed calm as if nothing happened and continued to watch TV at the care centre in which he was performing his duties.
Jeez.
He was sentenced 2 years for this crime, which he served only one and was released.
1 year in jail for raping a 7-year-old boy.
I cannot even fathom the logic behind that.
That's actually madness. That's genuinely insane.
A few years later, after his release, he raped another 6-year-old boy. He was sentenced to 7 years and only served 3.5 years.
That's madness. This guy has done 4.5 years in total for 2 separate child rapes. It's shocking.
I read some details that I wish I didn't read about these. They are absolutely horrific. And so I really don't understand why it's such a last sentence, such a low amount. And he's done it twice. He's done it, you know, he's come out, he's done it again.
Yeah, he's literally shown that he's not afraid of reoffending. And they've still only given him a pretty short sentence the second time.
Yeah, it's so shocking. So 10 years later, after this, Brett meets Daniel.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it was Brett.
Yes. Yeah, Brett was the person that abducted Daniel. On the 13th of August 2011, the police took Brett Peter Cohen into custody and charged him with the murder of Daniel, child stealing, deprivation of liberty, indecent treatment of a child under 16, interfering with a corpse, and many, many other offences.
So they've got all this from the Mr. Big operation?
They did. So they got all of this because he actually led the undercover cop to where Daniel's remains were. That was his trusting thing that he had to offer to get into this gang.
That is mad. That is literally... I don't even fully comprehend how that conversation went down with the undercover cop officer and Brett, because it feels like a weird thing to engage in. It's like, tell us something crazy that you've done before to enter our gang.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, let me take you to this body of a child that I killed years ago.
I mean, he would have had to have trusted that undercover cop. And, you know, they would have had to have shared things to make Brett believe that it was true. And that, you know, it's a big, powerful gang and, you know, they've got this big job coming up that he really wants to be a part of. The pressure of not pushing Brett too far for him then to realise, because they obviously had some evidence against him, but they just needed him to confess or gain further evidence for this crime. If they pushed him too far, he could have backed away and we would have never have known about all of this.
God, yeah, that's so true, isn't it? It could have never come out if it wasn't for that operation.
Because it's been so long since this disappearance. It was revealed that Brett had been interviewed in 2006. So he, again, we've talked about this before in other episodes, where the killer was interviewed during the investigation. Like, it's just so frustrating. But obviously they didn't know. But it's so frustrating that, you know, three years into his disappearance, Brett was interviewed by the police.
Was he interviewed as a possible suspect?
I believe so. Yeah, it was. Well, it was regarding his Daniel's disappearance, but
I guess they were probably speaking to known sex offenders in the area, and Brett happened to be one of them.
So Brett explained that he was travelling along Keel Mountain Road on his way to pick up some weed from a drug dealer. He said that he'd seen Daniel and offered him a lift to the shopping centre. He parked in a nearby church car park, and then he went over to Daniel and asked him if he wanted a lift. And Daniel, unfortunately, accepted.
That's so sad.
Super, super, super sad. So, trigger warning. Brett had planned to molest Daniel. However, from a secret recording device, this is what Brett said. "I never got to molest him. And he panicked, and I panicked, and I grabbed him by the throat, and before I could, he was dead." He said that he had planned to sexually assault him, but then drop him off at the shopping centre. Afterwards, he put Daniel down an embankment and his clothes were thrown into a creek. On the 21st of August 2011, two shoes, some underwear, a belt and three human bones were found at a search site at Glasshouse Mountains. The shoes matched the description Daniel was wearing the day of his disappearance. Daniel had a unique pocket watch that had Dan inscribed into it, but unfortunately this was not found during the search. After extensive investigation of the site, 17 bones were found, and through DNA extraction from Daniel's toothbrush, it was confirmed to be him.
So how long had it been from when Daniel went missing to them finding his body?
So Daniel was missing in 2003, and he was discovered in 2011.
8 years.
8 years.
That's so sad.
It was almost certain that Daniel had died within an hour of his abduction. On the 7th of December 2012, so 9 years exactly to the day of his disappearance, a funeral was held where over 2,000 people attended. Brett Cohen was ordered to stand trial on the 7th of February 2014. It officially started on the 10th of February and ended on the 6th of March. Brett pled not guilty to the crimes and declined to give evidence. I know, right? He's confessed. They've got a recording. They've got all this evidence.
I'd love to hear what that defence was, because how can you even explain all that away?
Right?
You're a registered offender when it comes to children.
Mm.
And you've outlined this entire story. And led the police to the body.
Right. I don't really know how he was going to get away with it. But he failed to give any evidence, so I don't think he really knew either. It's just, yeah. 116 witnesses stood and gave evidence. And over 200 exhibits of evidence was given. On the 13th of March, Brett was found guilty of all charges. Murder, indecently dealing with a child under the age of 16, and improperly dealing with a corpse by the Supreme Court of Queensland. He was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 20 years. He was additionally sentenced to 3.5 years for indecently dealing with Daniel and 2 interfering with his corpse, which he will serve concurrently. He will be eligible for parole in 2031.
What? What is this guy have, like, the best lawyers ever? What is going on? How is he getting such short and lenient sentences? Also, he's shown that he's clearly going to reoffend.
Absolutely. He's done it time and time again. Judge Rosalind Atkinson, who was the judge in this trial, she said, quote, "I don't think you should be released in 20 years' time." So I think it's probably similar to here, where life means 20 years. But I think with her statement with that, I don't think it will bode well when 20 years is up that they're likely to give him parole. I think he could have at least said without a chance of parole.
There'd probably be quite a lot of controversy if he gets released. Maybe we'll do an episode on it in 9 years.
Yeah, maybe.
Like Colin Pitchfork.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That was awful. Brett appealed his sentence, claiming that, quote, that the confession elicited through undercover sting by police was inadmissible as evidence at trial. On the 21st of May 2015, his appeal was dismissed. Another appeal for his sentence to be of a minimum of 20 years to be increased was also dismissed, which I thought was really interesting. So someone has come out and said 20 years is not enough for this person. It needs to be increased, and that was also dismissed.
That's so weird that they've tried to get it increased and still not had any luck.
I don't know whether it could have been, I don't know, money or something, that they didn't want to go to trial again for this person, but surely, I don't know, I feel like they could have stamped their little thing and said, nope, he's not coming out, but unfortunately, yeah, so we will see in 2031. So I want to talk slightly about the Daniel Morecambe Foundation.
Let's do it.
Denise and Bruce was Daniel's parents, and they wished to give back to the community that supported them throughout this investigation by creating the Daniel Morecambe Foundation, which is now one of the most well-known non-profit child safety organisations in Australia. It's designed to educate children on personal safety and raising awareness throughout Australia about the dangers of predatory criminals. An event known as A Day for Daniel is held annually on the last Friday of October in honour of the memory of Daniel.
A Day for Daniel has a good ring to it.
A Day for Daniel, yeah. And on this day, everybody wears the red t-shirts that Daniel was last seen in.
Oh, nice.
It's Australia's largest child safety education and awareness day. They host a range of events throughout the year, especially around this time, and it's just incredible the amount of work that Daniel's parents have done. And remember, you know, Daniel had a twin brother as well, identical twin brother. So it's just super, super, super tragic what happened. You can visit their website if you like at danielmorecambe.com.au for more information, because it's a really, really interesting organisation. And on one final note, I would like to say in 2015, Bruce, Daniel's father, reached out to another family who was going through something similar. The disappearance of a child, toddler, William Terrell. Bruce gave advice and insight to this family for what they may be dealing with ahead. He advised them that psychics would probably swarm around them and give them such, quote, bizarre and offbeat and distracting information. He also said to them that they must capture all the CCTV and ATM cameras of the date of the disappearance, which can be really helpful if one day that they catch someone for this crime, the abduction of William. If an alibi is given, that it's they can disprove it. Really, really good tip, which I was like, yeah, brilliant.
This guy knows his stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing that he's out there reaching other families that are going through similar torment and turmoil, and he's providing them with advice and like giving them a little insight on what they're going to expect. And Bruce finally told this family, quote, remain positive. That's all you can do. The police will be working hard. They will want to solve it as well. And you know, throughout this whole research, the perseverance and the strength of Daniel's parents really, really shone through. But those just words of just keep positive, like, they're working hard too. It's just, yeah, incredible.
Must be so hard for him to say that too when the outcome in Daniel's case was sadly so tragic.
Exactly, yeah. So to keep strong throughout all that, like, throughout that, and to remain positive, it's so, I just can't imagine it'd just be so difficult. And then for them to continuously do this organisation that will, you know, forever, always remind them of what happened. They described in this one interview that they had their life before with Daniel, and then they've got a new life now without Daniel, and they've kind of like, they're just two separate times, and they're trying to live their life as it is. But yeah, so it's super, just such a tragic story, such a tragic case, but a really important one to share.
They've built a legacy in Daniel's name, I suppose. Yeah. And as sad as it is, and they probably wish they didn't have it, they've got a purpose now. And I imagine it sounds like they've really helped other families that are going through the same things that they went through when Daniel disappeared.
Absolutely. They really have. And I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere that there were people that are going through similar things that have thanked them for you know, their support and advice. So, and they're reaching out other children to, you know, be safe and don't trust anyone. And yeah, they're doing some great things, and they definitely probably saved a lot of people by doing this.
It's interesting what you said about the psychics that will swarm around you after that happens. That's kind of tragic in itself.
Yeah, I thought that. I was like, oh, because that would be hard, because you know, you want to keep hope. You want to follow every lead. But it could be, like he says, it could be distracting. And the police could go down the wrong route, the wrong rabbit hole, the wrong, you know, and it could lose them time. So, yeah. I thought that was really interesting.
It's an interesting but very tragic case on the whole.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that case. I think I remember reading about some of these details, but I definitely didn't remember the name. Sounds like this will resonate a lot more with some of our Australian listeners.
Yeah.
Do you want to share the socials so that people that want to discuss this case can reach out?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can follow us on Instagram at Gore and Guilty Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Gore and Guilty. You can also visit our website, www.goreandguiltypodcast.com, where on there you can share your reviews, have a little look around. There's all our episodes are uploaded there as well, so it's all kind of in one place, which is really cool. But yeah, go check that out. We're grateful for any support or reviews. That'd be fantastic. But most of all, thank you for listening. And remember, we won't judge if
Gore is your guilty pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Thanks, guys.